We propose a way to derive the classical picture from a quantum theory. The idea is that, the purpose that we have a quantum Hamiltonian. We want to, quantum Hamiltonian have many energy levels. And we want to find a way to obtain the low-lying energy levels from the quantum Hamiltonian. The idea we have is that we first turn this quantum theory into a classical theory. Then we simplify the classical theory in terms of harmonic oscillator. Then using the simplified harmonic classical theory to obtain this spectrum. So in the last class, we discussed one way to obtain classical theory from this equation motion method by identifying certain, using average of certain operator as our classical variables and develop a classical theory in terms of these classical variables. So today we are going to discuss another method we call the coherent state method. So in this method, the classical variable simply is a parameter in the coherent states. The basic coherent states are like a variational state with some variational parameter. So this you can view this Ci as some variational parameters. Then we simply view those variational parameters as classical variable and develop a theory for this classical variable. And in last class, we emphasized that this classical variable should be viewed as a coordinate in a phase space because those classical variables specify classical states. So therefore, one way to obtain dynamics or classical theory for those classical variables is that to obtain the phase space Lagrangian, which is given by this one. It contains a Baryz phase term and contains the average energy term. So that's essentially how we obtain a classical theory from the coherent states. So today we are going to discuss two examples of this theory. One example is the continuation of the story of this kind of unharmonic oscillator theory. So our theory is this P squared over 2 plus 1/2 V x squared plus 1/4 x hat cubed. Okay. So this is our Hamiltonian. And then the coherent states. First, let's do the variational states. It's simply so this alpha is a variational parameter. Okay. And this is a normalized wave function. Okay. Then the average energy turns out to be the I think this is cube. There's an error in the notes, not square. So this is the average energy. And then we simply find, so this average energy can be minimized. So alpha 0 minimized. Minimize this average energy. Okay, there's a long expression for this alpha 0 in the lecture notes. I won't copy that. And it's minimizing this just a setting derivative for this is equal to 0. It turned out to be a third order algebraic equation, which happened to have a complete analytic solution. And so alpha 0, let's assume alpha 0 is a parameter which minimizes this energy. Okay. So that is a, so one way, then I may say, OK, so maybe we can use alpha as our classical parameter, label the classical states. Maybe, yes, we probably can do that. I didn't try it. But for this particular problem, we will not use alpha as the Cassie here to label the classical states. We introduce a different parameter. So the coherent states we are going to use here is this one. I think this should be quarter. Let me see. Yeah, this is a quarter. Okay. So this is the coherent state we can use. And this Cassie1, Cassie2 is our classical parameter. Okay. The reason we use this particular ansatz is that, you know, this problem is kind of a problem with some kind, it's a kind of unharmonic oscillator. This x, this is a v. Okay. So naturally, so okay. So the ground state wave function we find with some optimal alpha zero. Basically, we just construct some kind of wave packet which minimizes energy. Okay. So the parameter we choose, this Cassie1, Cassie2 parameter, simply is that the Cassie1 obviously shift the center of the Gaussian. So Cassie1 is how much we shift this Gaussian wave packet. Okay. Cassie2 actually is a boost. It add a momentum. So Cassie2 is like a momentum. It's add momentum to the wave packet. So it's hard to draw in the real space, but in the momentum space, this Cassie2 just shifts the average momentum. You know, the wave packet don't have depth of momentum, but the average momentum equal to zero. The Cassie2 simply shifts its average momentum. So it's a boost factor. So in some sense, it's like Cassie1 is a coordinate, Cassie2 is a momentum. So I have this interpretation. Okay. Certainly, if you like, you can also include the alpha, like a bracing mode. You know, in this ansatz, we assume this wave pipe can move back and forth without changing its width. So ignore its bracing. So I didn't try that, but one may try to add the bracing mode. If you make an alpha also dynamical, this alpha also dynamical, then it's like a the wave packet may can't have bracing mode. I don't know what the result that's going to be, but that's interesting. Okay, but anyway, so we use these two. And then the rest will be pretty standard. We just plug that in, you know. If you plug this into there, in general, we obtain something like this. The Burstray term gave us this AI Cassie term times Cassie I dot minus this average of energy term. So I have these two terms. So it turns out if you do that, we find this the average energy term. It's pretty easy to calculate. You just sandwich this Hamiltonian between two wave functions, then do the integral. Okay, you get some function of Cassie1, Cassie2. And the basis is some kind of Gaussian integral. Okay, so what we obtain is that we find average energy is 1/2 to C2 squared plus 3 alpha 0 plus 2 alpha squared 0 V over 4 alpha squared 0 to C1 squared. Then plus 1/4 to C1 to the first power, and plus this 3 plus 4. There's a constant term. So alpha 0 is the alpha which minimizes this expression. Okay. So basically, if Qc1, Qc2 equal to 0, we get previous results, just this average energy. If Qc1, Qc2 not equal to 0, then we get some extra contributions. Okay. So then the birth-phase term turns out to be the following. The A1 equal to 0, and A2 equal to minus. So let's calculate this a little bit. So what is this? Okay. Yes. So basically, this is these two correspond to this birth-phase term, and the average energy is probably this is a more familiar calculation. So I will do this birth-phase calculation. The birth-phase has nothing to do with the Hamiltonian. It's totally dependent on the choice of a wave function. Okay. So this A1 basically is this wave function and with I, no, partial C1 is this. Okay, so this verifies term. So C1 is this term. Okay, so we just plug in. So this became an integration of x, and then there's some number here I just ignore. So basically, it's this one. So there's some number times is and then we have this e to the minus. Okay. And then we do the derivative, just a moment. When we do a derivative, we get this minus alpha x minus x1. Yes?
Where did that equation for A1 come from? I thought we found A1 to be 0.
We try to calculate A1 to be 0. Okay. I want to show A1 equal to 0. Oh. Okay, so I think I didn't write AI here. Yeah, AI is this. Maybe let me write down this. AI is equal to, I think it's I times cos I t. Partial to C. It's this one. Basically, this ddt can be decomposed into the partial t, partial to ci, and then the, I try to do this. dt decomposing to this partial ci, and then the ci dot. So maybe like the, it's a d ci dt. So this is a decomposition we used. So that's turn this ddt term into this ai times ci term. So that's how we do it. Kind of chain rule in the differentiation. Okay. So this is a calculation. And this plane wave term cancel out because we have a complex conjugate. So this term cancel out. Here is a dagger, and here without dagger, and this term dropped. This cancel out. Yes?
One more question. How come we don't have a partial with respect to alpha being part of a chain rule expansion of ddt?
Oh, here we assume alpha is fixed. So we don't view alpha as dynamical. We just minimize alpha for the first time, then fix it. So it's no longer a chain. So that's why I use alpha here. So only this plus one plus two is the dynamical variable. But however, if you want to study the greasing, if you add a greasing of the wave packet as your part of your picture, then you can treat alpha as dynamical variable. And they will derive a different classical theory. I didn't try, but that's interesting what that would be. Okay. So this is a okay. But this is a this is equal to zero. Because this is a Gaussian wave packet centered at Kc1. And this odd function respect to the Kc1. So the integration just vanishes. Okay. Then the A2 is equal to I. Then we have this dx with this number. And similarly, we have this e to the minus alpha over 2x, x minus Kc1 squared. And then we have this e to the minus alpha over 2x minus Kc1 squared. But now we make a derivative respect to Kc2 now. So Kc2 may have some time dependence also respect to Kc2 is here. So therefore, we bring down, if you make a derivative respect to Kc2, we bring down Ix. So we bring down Ix. Then after bring down this Ix, then we still have this exponential from this part, which cancel the minus of the plane wave from this part. So again, this factor dropped. So only compute this extra I. But then this one, what is this? This is just equal to minus x of minus Kc1. The minus square of I and I give us a minus. And average x is Kc1. Because this is the wave packet centered at Kc1. So the average of x just gives us Kc1. So that's it. OK. So therefore, A1 equals 0, A2 equals minus Kc1. OK. So therefore, yes? Okay, it's a cancel because this is normalization factor. So after doing the average, the integration became just a normalization condition for the wave function. So we pick this factor so that wave function is normalized, so that integration became 1. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm too quick here. So this number just after dropping this number just make whole integration into 1, the normalization condition, which is this if you do this. Okay, so then at the end, we find the phase space Lagrangian is a minus Kc1, Kc2 dot minus some Hamiltonian Kc1, Kc2. And this function is just the function just right down here. Okay. And that's very much like the familiar form. So let's write this as the following. This can be written as a minus xp dot minus hxp. We can view the Kc1 as x, Kc2 as a p. Then have this. You say, oh, this is not quite the phase space Lagrangian we are familiar with. The phase space Lagrangian we are familiar with actually is a px dot minus hxp. So this is the right one. Here it's not quite right. But the two differ by a total time derivative. Total time derivative is a dpx dt. So these two forms differ by a total time derivative. So they are equivalent. Okay. So we don't worry about that. So the bottom line is that using the coherent state approach, we indeed obtain a phase space Lagrangian. And in this case, this Kc1, Kc2 dot term is really the Barry phase term. So this kind of is Barry, we call the Barry connection, which really defines the Barry phase. Okay. And the Hamiltonian just average energy. That's very simple. Okay. And from here, so then we finish our goal. From the quantum system, we obtain a classical system. So next, we want to simplify the classical system. To simplify this classical system, what you can do is that, say, at least for positive V. For positive V, so at least term is always positive. So we can just drop this quadratic term. Because the ground state of this classical system is simply the Kc1 equal to 0 and Kc2 equal to 0. Because if both these coefficients equal to positive, then Kc1 equal to 0, Kc2 equal to 0 is ground state. The low-lying fluctuation in the classic system simply just Kc1, Kc2 have some small fluctuation. And this small fluctuation just, so for the small fluctuation, we can just ignore this part. Okay. Then once we do that, we find such classic system became a, in this simplified classic system, we have a Hamiltonian oscillator. The oscillating frequency simply is this one. So this curve is written as 1/2 m omega squared. But m equal to 1. So if you treat this as a p squared over 2m, so m equal to 1. So we can write spring constant as a 1/2 m omega squared. This omega will be oscillation frequency. But m equal to 1, so we see that omega squared is twice of this coefficient. So therefore, omega simply is a square root of what we have there. So 3 alpha 0 plus 2 alpha 0 squared to b divided by 2 alpha 0. So that's oscillation frequency. So this is this slightly different. Okay. And alpha 0 actually is a function of v. Alpha 0 is a function of v. Because alpha 0, remember, is obtained by minimizing energy. So therefore, we have here is omega actually also is really a function of v. Okay. Then what is the Gwangsi energy? The Gwangsi energy, the energy spectrum is simply energy spectrum. It's a is this constant term. So that's a 3 plus 4 alpha 0 cube plus 4 alpha 0 over 16 alpha 0 squared plus n plus 1 half h bar omega. And omega is this. Here we have h bar equal to 1. So right. So in this common oscillator picture, we all obtain the energy. Alpha 0 is a function v, and omega also function v. So therefore, this is an energy, so this energy spectrum is function v. And in the lecture notes of figure 2.7, we have this top. So this solid curve is the top of this, this energy level. And we find it's much better. It's much better than the equation motion. Okay. So this example will demonstrate how we turn the quantum system into classical system and a simplified classical system and then we obtain energy level. Yes.
Could this thing just have the m? Because right now if n equals 0 we don't really get the same ground state.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It should be 10. Very, very important. I'm sorry, it should be 10. Because this is a different. And let me see. How should I say this? Yeah, this is probably this. Because this energy is already a full energy. This is already the energy. And so, so this part is really excitation, you know. The ground state, this really ground state, this really variation of ground state energy. And then the actual computing gets increased, yes.
So if you now just do the usual raising lowering operator quantization technique, then we should get a half.
Here, yes. And this is a...
N plus half.
Yeah, in this case, you shouldn't have the half.
No?
Yeah, you shouldn't have the half.
But quantizing it will give you
a half. Quantizing that will give you a half, I agree. Yeah, but you shouldn't have the half. I don't know what part of explain this. Basically, it's this energy, this classic energy is already a quantum energy with fluctuation.
The other comment is that we can always add a constant to a classical potential, even in the simple harmonic oscillator, right? So then, you know, in that case, we can always have.
So the point is the following. Let me make a point. According to the rule of quantization, you should have a half. But I guess say, why should you follow the rule?
Because you're quantizing it.
But then the point is also the rule is a mean to be broken. But the thing that what I can say. Okay, this is already grounded energy. If you follow the rule, you get the wrong result, so let's don't follow the rule. And the right interpretation is that this frequency is the increase beyond increased energy from first exciting states. So you're totally right, you should have n on the half. This is very important. Yes.
So, because like shifting like the quantized system's energy by, you know, a half or whatever, it doesn't affect the dynamics. Like, in what sense is adding one half to that give you the wrong answer?
The thing is that this one is a variational energy for the ground states, for the quantum ground states.
Okay.
So that's already our best result for the quantum ground states.
So the idea is that
when you quantize this fluctuating classical part, you better not add anything to your already best answer to the quantum ground state energy.
So you're fixing the ground state energy by saying that the ground state energy of the approximated system has to be equal to the ground state energy of the original system?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because this is this is like a part of variational approach. We already using variational approach, get a sideway packet and get this
the best guess of the ground standard already. And when you further quantize it, just increase. Yes?
So this is a way off the topic probably, but
yeah.
In quantum field theory, we actually have a system of infinite coupled harmonic oscillators.
Yes.
And the ground state energy of those oscillators in some sense contribute to what is known as a vacuum energy.
Yes, yes.
And so I was just wondering if this kind of way of looking at it, we get a new perspective on the vacuum energy.
No, it won't. But actually, I will talk about that maybe next week, about this issue. And here I really say, I try to say not follow the rule of quantization, you know. To me, like, the physics here is pretty clear. What we are looking for is pretty clear. You know, we already got the ground energy. So this is ground energy. So we already got this one. And we want to get the next one, so we really need to get this energy gap. But this energy gap really is the oscillation frequency, you know. So once you get oscillation frequency, you get this energy gap. So in some sense, obviously, we do it this way. And but this doesn't mean the zero-point energy is not there, because the reason this can already have zero-point energy, that other thing, this can already have zero-point energy. So if you add one half, we can't count that part for some reason. So this is one application. But in this application, we see one thing, is that A0 equal 0, A2 equal C1, or at least this, if you view this as a vector potential in phase space, they have to describe uniform magnetic field. So this is an example where we have uniform magnetic field in phase space, and we get a pretty standard phase space Lagrangian, and which have Newton's law. And in the next example, we are going to discuss a case where the phase space Lagrangian gave us a more generic, this A1, A2. This vector can be more generic. And which led to a non-uniform magnetic field in phase space. And then we get dynamics which is beyond Newton's law. And this example is really an example of particle hopping in a semiconductor. So let's discuss this particle hopping semiconductor. Yes. And so first we have the sign. So let's consider a lattice and label the by this I vector. Okay. So we have a space on this lattice point. And then the point can hop. That's a key idea. Coming from I side J side. Okay. So therefore, we only count a single particle. So we have this Hamiltonian described this particle hopping in this lattice. Okay. So the Hamiltonian is given by this Tij. Let me try to follow my notation. Here is that. Ij. So this is Hamiltonian. So this I is a state on I side, J is a state on J side. And this is just a bra vector and cat vector. And using that to write down this Hamiltonian, hopping Hamiltonian. And here we'll consider a little more complicated situation. That is on every side, we may have several orbitals, like each side like atoms. Atom may have many orbitals. So let's using A to label different orbital on each side. So then the hopping can be more complicated. We can have the A orbital in I side hopping to the B orbital in the J side. The amplitude is TABIJ. So therefore, we can have, we add another index to label the orbital. So this A and B is orbital index, and we have TAB. So that describes the Hopping Hamiltonian. Okay, so that's it. This is a Hamiltonian. And we can rewrite this Hamiltonian in a slightly different form with N and I. So T I plus N I A B and I plus N A and I B. We can write Hamiltonian this way. And in this way, we just N is how far we hop, you know. So here we hop in the x direction by 1 unit. So that means n equal to x. If hop here this way, we hop in y direction in 1 unit, so n will be y. Or we can, n can be 2y, that means hop from here to here. Okay, this is how far we hop. Okay. So this is so this will be the Hopping Hamiltonian. Okay. So first let's find the eigenvalue and eigenfunction of this Hopping Hamiltonian. So how do you do that? And first we notice that in our case, we assume this this one do not depend on position, only depend on how far they hop, this hopping amplitude. So this can really equal to Tn. Do not depend on I explicitly. So that means we are considered the translation invariant system. So hopping from here to here and from here to here have same amplitude. It only depend on how far they hop, don't depend on where they start hopping. Okay. So once you have translation invariant system, you know that to diagonalize Hamiltonian, you better go into plane wave basis. You know, the problem will be simplified in a plane wave basis when you have translation symmetry. Okay, so let's rewrite this Hamiltonian in the plane wave basis. Okay. So in a plane wave basis, basically, so let's introduce this plane wave basis. Ka, which is equal to number of n, 1/2. N is total number of sides. I, e to the I, k dot I, sum over I vector, and I a. So that's how we go from the lattice basis, or real space basis, to the wave vector basis, or plane wave basis. And using this, and we find that or we can have reverse the reverse transformation will be this equal to sum over k over n. And here I want to say that k is discrete. Actually, k have the property that it's a 2 pi over L times integer. The all the component of k, say kx, ky, kz, let me put this, kx. So k, let me just do this. Kx is this, ky is similar, it's 2 pi over L times integer. And the kz is a similar thing. Yes? Yeah, this has been taken care of because n can be also minus n term. You know, so very important actually. Here, thank you for reading this. If you choose this Tn arbitrarily, this Hamiltonian may not be Hermitian. So Tn, T minus n must have certain relation.
so that it can be Hermitian. So let's postpone this question a little bit later. Yeah. So basically, this hopping amplitude of hopping this way and hopping amplitude for the reverse way, they should be related to have a Hermitian Hamiltonian. Otherwise, Hamiltonian is not Hermitian even. Okay. So once we write this, so we can show that. So we can show this relation. Sum over I plus n, A, and I, B. So if you sum over I, you know, this operator, and just plug this into here, we get something very simple, e to the minus I, k dot n. Look at this. Okay, so you may say, so how to get this? Okay, basically you just substitute this into here and here. Okay. But once you do that, you'll find the following. Because this k is dummy variable. So therefore, when you substitute this sum into here and here, you have k and k prime, because they're two independent sums. You should have k and k prime. But then you also do this sum of I. So basically what you have is that you have a, so you have a term like e to the I k plus n I vector and minus k prime and I, and you sum over I. And this sum over I give you zero only unless k equal to k prime. Oh yeah, I plus n, yes. K dot I plus n, good. Yes.
Used on those first two points there, or on those first two equations on
yes.
that column there. Since I and k are, where is the minus sign coming from? Because it looks like those two things are really the same equation.
This is a Fourier transmission. This is the inverse Fourier transmission, but I written in the discrete.
Oh,
this is a discrete
okay,
form.
Okay, you're letting k be momentum.
Yes.
It's a
Fourier transformation, but this is a discrete form. You know, the
yeah.
continuous form is the k is equal to dx e to the kx and the percent x. But the reverse one, this will have a minus sign.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I just.
But this is just in a discrete form of a Fourier transformation.
Right. I just somehow.
Yeah.
The definition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Here. Oh yeah, there is a summation of k here. Let me see. Yes, there is summation of k. Okay, so this is okay. So when you plug this into here, you have a sum over k and a sum over k prime. Basically, you have sum over k and a sum over k prime. Because these two different terms and this k is dummy variable, so one is the k, one is the k prime. Okay, and so then we also have sum of I here. So in this expression, I just take this term out. just examine this term. Okay, I may be a little too quick here. And so this e to the I k dot I plus n k coming from the first term. And the second term will contain the complex conjugate. So we have e to the minus I, k prime I dot I. Because this, now the dummy variable for this one is k prime. And because we did this summation of I, the summation of I is non-zero only when k equal to k prime. This is the discrete version of e to the I kx. If you do the integration of I, give you a delta function of k. And so when you sum over I only when k equal to k prime, you get a non-zero answer. So therefore, we should set k prime equal to k, so drop this prime, so we no longer have a k prime summation. And when k, these two are equal, then this term and the cancel this I term. So what's surviving is just e to the I. I think this should be plus. Oh no, I got it wrong. So this should be minus, this should be plus because I got this minus. So this is minus one. Okay. So just doing this first transformation, we get this result. Okay. And this is the key result. This is the key result. And so therefore we can rewrite this sum using this. So that's what we can sum over n and sum over k t n a b. So here using the fact that this t I plus n to I do not depend on I, only depend on n, so we just drop I, we only have n here. And this sum of I with this summation just give us this term. So we have e to the minus I k dot n, and then this k a k. And then we can change this order. We sum over n first, sum of k later. And can this quantity, this the sum of n can be done for this quantity. It's a little bit like doing the Fourier transformation for the Tn. So after that, this we call this quantity, give that quantity a name, k, called m a b, which is function of k. N summation is done. Okay. Then have this. So finally, we did our job. We somehow rewrite this Hamiltonian in real space, but in the basis, you know, for plane wave basis, we go to the plane wave basis from real space basis to plane wave basis. So that's it. So what do we get? Still looks pretty complicated. But what again is following, this one is a block diagonalized. You can see in the real spaces, this I and this is a J. This I and J are different. A and B are different. So they all mix up. But the plane wave basis, this K and the K is the same. So this harmonic do not change K. They only mix A and B. So we can treat k as a parameter. Then we apply this harmonic to some space. Only a and b get mixed. And that's a finite dimensional matrix. So if you all have two orbitals, say a only equal to 1, 2, this n is 2 by 2 matrix. So diagonal 2 by 2 matrix is much easier. So it's kind of block diagonalized. And we just have for fixed k, we just diagonalize m, then we get back. Okay. Yes.
How can we claim sum over A and B?
We sum over A and B, sorry.
K
Yeah, you're in the collider, the shooting back on time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I kind of mix up. Sometimes I, you know, either the other piece, I write this sum for A and B. And B. So, yeah, A and B is indeed a sum. I'm sorry. And so A and B are sum. Okay. So now it's became pretty simple now. Okay. Now it's become pretty simple. So what is we just need to diagonalize this matrix, which is a function K. When we diagonalize this matrix as a function K, what do we get? We may get this epsilon 1 K, epsilon 2 K, and etc. So epsilon 1, epsilon 2 are eigenvalues. And we also get this psi r bar. So instead of the generic one with epsilon r. And the psi r bar is like psi r bar 1 from k. This is really from k. And the, sorry, psi 1, 1, psi r bar 1, sorry. Psi r bar 2. So this psi alpha, this column vector, is eigenvector for this epsilon alpha, for this eigenvalue. Okay. So what we have achieved is that actually this epsilon 1 k, epsilon 2 k, or epsilon alpha k is indeed those are eigenvector of this function, eigenvalue of this function. We can diagonalize. We first block diagonalize. So the n is block. When we diagonalize block, then we get total eigenvalue. Okay.
And this is what we call the energy band, actually. This is the exact energy band. So in one dimension, we can just plot this epsilon. So this is a k, this is the epsilon alpha. So we can have one band like that, another energy band like that. So those are energy bands. Yes?
Where is the band
here? Huh? No,
what I'm talking, so from this lowest band is simply the epsilon 1 as function k.
Right.
So that's kind of dispersion relation.
Yeah.
You can see, those are, we are doing plane waves.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So those are energy for these plane waves. But the higher here, we not only have one plane wave, because on every side, we have several orbitals. So we have several plane waves. So if you have an orbital, you'll have n band here. That's a theoretical sentence. N orbital, n band. And if the hopping don't mix orbital, for example, hopping only between the one orbital or two orbitals, then each band only contains one orbital. But in general, hopping may have a hopping from one orbital to two orbitals, the first to second orbital. Then this band may have mixing, superposition, the mixing of different orbitals. And so this is the band theory. Yes.
And this plane wave, can we think of it as some sort of collective motion of the particle?
No. It's just eigenspace. The plane wave is just eigenspace. It's really just like a plane wave in real space. You know, in the plane wave real space, you know, even IKX, that's plane wave. What is the energy for this? Well, epsilon k is a 1/2 k squared over n. We just write it down. But however, in the lattice, the plane we see with this, but the energy dispersion relation is more complicated. And it's we have really, from the Hopping until we have obtained this matrix as function k. Then the eigenvalue of the matrix as function k gave us the energy as function k. That can give us a very complicated dispersion relation. Okay, so, and then the, okay. So so this is the basic theory for semiconductor. You know, in the crystal, when you like to hop in a crystal, that's how the energy band was formed in the crystal. So now let me raise a question, and I will answer the next class. So now we suppose we have one electron here in the first band. And we can add a force to it, maybe like a mover one. So what is dynamics? So that's the question. What's the dynamics of the electron with this band? And so first let's just guess.
So what is the energy of the electron? The energy or the Hamiltonian of the electron only depend on the momentum p. But we know the momentum and the wave vector is the same. So if you take h by equal to 1, the momentum is equal to h wave vector. So therefore, the energy for this particle is simple. It's very simple, just epsilon 1 k. So let's use k. So p and k is the same thing, just epsilon and k. Then what is dynamics? Dynamics is very simple. Just phase-based Lagrangian is, once we know the Hamiltonian and is as function of momentum, then we just have a position x of p, x or maybe k x dot minus epsilon 1 k. So that's a phase-based Lagrangian. And to add the force, that's also simple. We just add the potential terms. Suppose we add a little bit of potential, so to push electron around. And so this is like kinetic energy, which is very special. It's not like a k squared. Kinetic energy can be a pretty complex function of k. And we add the potential energy, then we get this, then we get the phase-based Lagrangian. So this is a way to obtain this dynamics of electron in energy band. And this is a standard way and a wrong way. And this is wrong, actually. But people use that all the time. And so the reason it's wrong is that this part is all right. This part just average energy, just this. Just this part. And the wrong part is the barrier phase part. Yeah, we didn't calculate the barrier phase part. We somehow assume it's just a kx dot. So we have to check whether it is kx dot or not. In our first example, we did the calculation, we find, yes, it's just kx dot. And in this particular case, it's no longer kx dot, actually. It's more complicated. And that led to a different dynamics. And it's a little bit embarrassing. this feature only discovered recently. Also, all the semiconductor physics has been for so long, you know. And so this is called spin orbital coupling, you know, in semiconductor. And it's related to some spin Hall effect or spintronics, you know. And but there's not many experiments really probing the new barrier phase term and this consequence. And but in next class, we'll finish this calculation and really calculate the barrier phase term to see why in this particular example this can be different. Yeah. So the point is that just calculating the dispersion relation or calculating this kinetic energy term is not enough to determine the classical dynamics. We have to be careful to calculating this the bare face term. Then you get a full picture of classical dynamics. Yeah. Okay, I will stop here.